Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Tuesday, May 13, 2025, the day Mr. Trump has landed. He will nearly land in half an hour in the Middle East, finally.
Yeah.
And I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warat Ahmed. This is completely great news, and we've got a packed show for you today. Firstly, we're going to be discussing how Saudi Arabia's crown prince launched Humane, an artificial intelligence company, just last night ahead of Trump's visit. Secondly, Elon Musk is set to join Trump's delegation at the Saudi-U.S. forum as the Gulf tour is beginning. And finally, we're going to be discussing how NBC Group has posted $70 million Q1 profit surge, up 50% from the last quarter, as new CEO Michael Sneesby is taking leadership.
And forgive us if we say a lot of Trump today and in our posts and everywhere if we say a lot of Trump, because it's all about his four-day trip to the Gulf. So let's start with Saudi Arabia, where he's going. But it's a very Saudi story that we're doing. It's Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who has announced the launch of Humane. It's a very nice wordplay on human, but with an AI, a new artificial intelligence company fully owned by the Public Investment Fund, or PIF. The company will play a key role in developing, managing, and investing across the entire AI value chain as part of the kingdom's broader push to lead in next-generation technologies.
Now, Humane is going to offer cutting-edge AI services, including the development of one of the world's most advanced Arabic language large language models, also known as LLMs. It also plans to establish next-generation data centers and cloud infrastructure to power these technologies.
The company is expected to act as a national AI champion, much like MGX, which is in Abu Dhabi and UAE, providing tools and solutions across sectors such as healthcare, energy, manufacturing, and finance. With this launch, Saudi Arabia is sending a clear signal of intent to be a global player in artificial intelligence.
Now, this initiative supports the kingdom's broader goals of economic diversification and digital transformation. We have seen how the prices of oil have gone down, so this is completely necessary. And it's such a large part of Saudi Vision 2030, aiming to build a knowledge-based, innovation-driven economy. Now, Humane also strengthens the country's leadership in the Arabic AI space.
And it is backed by the nearly $1 trillion PIF, Public Investment Fund. Humane will invest heavily in AI infrastructure, hardware, and research and development, which is very short for R&D. It is expected to attract global talent and forge international partnerships to advance local capabilities.
And Saudi Arabia's strategic location, young population, and expanding digital infrastructure make it well-positioned to become a global AI hub. Now, Humane is now at the heart of the kingdom's ambition to shape the future of artificial intelligence worldwide. Now, imagine with this story, what makes it even more special is that we just recently discussed how, I believe it was a study by Stanford, that there are more women in Saudi Arabia
in
artificial intelligence jobs, more so than men. So, you know, with the launch of this new startup by the Crown Prince Salman himself, what we're seeing here is that women are definitely going to they're going to play a huge part in it.
Yeah, and the whole idea, I think, is very nice, because you talk about AI and the race between Saudi and UAE, and you always talk about the money that's going into AI and infrastructure and this and that. But now Saudi Arabia is standing right shoulder to shoulder, because we always talk about MGX. MGX has a stake in the world's biggest AI startups. They have a stake in OpenAI. They have a stake in X AI, Elon Musk's XAI. They are planning to go into some of the biggest AI ventures in the world, MGX is already a part of them.
So with this, I believe it's a part of the Stargate project.
Yeah, it's part of the Stargate project
also.
So this project comes after MGX, but looks very similar to that. So you have to draw similarities between them. This is also focused on AI infrastructure. MGX is all about AI infrastructure. MGX is also part of that 30 billion cohort where Microsoft, Elon Musk has joined it also, BlackRock, and MGX, these four companies, they developed a $30 billion fund to make infrastructure. Mm. So it's all about AI infrastructure,
it
AI
is.
Data centers.
But more so, than nice that, step. Majid, Humane, I think what stands out about it is Arabization.
Yeah.
It's the fact that they're not just building AI models, they're building AI models that actually work for the humans that need it.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I'll give you a very simple example. I always use CapCut to edit, and what I've noticed with captions, when I generate the captions, is that with everything that I'm saying in like the English language, it gives me the spelling correct. But when I say an Arabic word, an Arabic country, an Arabic pronunciation, it does not generate the spelling for it correctly. But for some reason, it could be the most complicated name in English, and it will get the spelling completely right. So I think that models like this are completely needed, and it's definitely going to push that Arabization that we need in the Arab region, and that more people who speak the Arabic language can have. Because in Saudi Arabia, by the way, more than 50% of the population speaks only Arabic.
A lot of people speak Arabic. You go to Saudi Arabia, a lot of the time you try to talk to a person. In UAE, it's very common. You go to any person, even if he's Arab, you see very clearly, you'll start talking in English. In Saudi Arabia, that's not the case. Sometimes you go and you're like, okay, this guy doesn't speak English. Just a small lesson of linguistics here, because I'm very interested in languages. I love learning about their origins. The problem with, it's not a problem, it's a very nice, beautiful thing with Arabic language.
Mm.
It has so many dialects that English doesn't even compare to it. So English, the basic thing whenever you talk about English is the UK English and the US English, right? Even when you're selecting a language on your laptop or any phone, it says, okay, US English or UK English. But with Arabic, you know, you speak Arabic, you guys have a different dialect, you use different words for different things. And that is what I realized when I came here. So I started learning the basic sentences in the Arabic Fusha.
What's your favorite one?
Yeah, I started with hello, marhaba, and all that, and then I went to min wain. But a lot of sentences that I learned in the classic Arabic, when you go talk to a person, they're like, okay, they're taken aback by why are you speaking in to us like so formally. So I'm like, okay, min ayn anta, and they were like, no, min wain is the common version. So a lot of things are very complicated about Arabic. Again, this investment, a lot of startups that are trying to do it, we will soon, it's a very good chance, we'll soon see some LLM or some AI specifically focused on Arabic.
We definitely will.
We use Bith AI also. We've used it in our company, and they have very nice pronunciations.
They do.
So whenever you do text-to-speech, their pronunciation of the words is very good. You start with 11 labs, you give it an Arabic name. I don't know what it does to the name. It'll be the most vicious pronunciation of that name.
I think even Veed is really good translating Arabic.
Yeah.
And I think with Humane, it has an added advantage of being backed by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, which is nearly worth $1 trillion.
Yeah.
So you know that they will definitely have the budget that they need to get to where they need to be.
And talking about the budgets and the money and economy, U.S. President Donald Trump is set to arrive in Saudi Arabia this morning. He'll land UAE 11 and Saudi Arabia 10 a.m. He will kick off a four-day tour of the Gulf that puts economic cooperation at the center of the agenda.
Now, the trip will take him from Saudi Arabia to Qatar and then the United Arab Emirates, ending in May 16th, placing business deals ahead of diplomacy, even as regional tensions remain high over Gaza and Iran.
And joining the president is a powerful U.S. business delegation, including Tesla CEO and Trump advisor Elon Musk. Apparently, he got the invitation. We still don't know if he's coming because he always says yes to everything. We saw him Dubai, which was the event. Where he spoke
from
video.
I remember when he announced the Dubai Loop project.
Yeah, what was the event? The Dubai Government Summit. World Government Summit.
That was not him appearing, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. No,
that
no,
is
I'm
video
saying
call.
He says yes, but his idea is he'll do a video call just to show off his Starlink.
I think he's going to be here this time, Magic.
Today is the event. So we still don't know. There's no verification. Reuters said that they've seen the invite sent to him.
Mm.
So
Reuters gave an update this morning, by the way.
So he is coming 100%.
He's definitely coming. He's definitely joining the delegation.
Nice, nice. So he's there. And Trump advisor, Mr. Elon Musk, who's attending the Saudi U.S. Investment Forum, and it is going to start in the afternoon. So as soon as he comes, he's being welcomed. They'll go for the forum.
And also, present, we have leaders from BlackRock, Citigroup, IBM, Boeing, Delta, American and United Airlines. Now, the forum is expected to generate major economic announcements and deepen Saudi-American ties.
And Musk's appearance marks a renewed partnership with Saudi Arabia's PIF following Tesla's April market entry and a healing rift that began with the 2018 Go Private controversy.
Now, as Trump pushes for $1 trillion in Saudi investments in the U.S., with a $100 billion arms deal reportedly on the table for Saudi, the visit signals a new era of Gulf American economic alignment. Yeah. I think for me, this with this entire trip, what shocked me the most, Majid, is according to The National and according to other sources, yeah, for an Air Force One presidential plane to run, it requires $175,000 per hour, up to $200,000 per hour. I'm completely surprised right now. And the amount of people that Trump probably has traveling with him, that could reach up to 1,000 people. Yeah. That number is crazy, Majid. How long do you think his flight was?
U.S. to direct flight, even if they fly the most direct path, I think it takes 6 to 7 hours, at least 10 hours, what I think, because last night he did the press conference where he said so many things. He said he's going to lift, he hinted at lifting sanctions on Syria. He talked about the Qatar jet that is being gifted and the talk about it. And he was like, I will be stupid not to get a free jet for our forces and for Air Force One. So he said a lot of things in those press conferences. That was late night. So the takeoff and everything, I think him landing at 10, he flew out around 11 or 12 in the night. So they're here. By the time we finish the show, he'll be here in the Middle East. The only important thing that I think out of all of this is that he is coming as with the 1,000 people contingent. The security needs to be so tight. I was reading that article that we shared to each other. It's such a nice thing that every president has such a big entourage. We always see him. The usual videos are he's coming out of the airplane, then someone receives him, he walks the aisle, there's ministers, he meets them, then he'll go and meet the crown prince. But there's always such a large contingent with them. They carry blood of the president, so U.S. Trump's blood in bulk will be carried. They'll always bring the Cadillac with them.
Blood in bulk?
Yeah, they always have Trump's blood with them. Whichever president visits, they always bring their blood frozen. So just in case in need, they need it in an emergency. It's a very nice detailed article on what they bring. So it's safety for the president since he's going on a foreign trip. Anything can happen.
And apparently it requires like 25 U.S. government organizations to actually
coordinate the whole thing,
entire trip. But just like on the subject of Elon Musk and us seeing him appear in Saudi Arabia, probably for the first time, the last time that I saw an appearance of him was during FII, and it was...
No, FII also, he did a video.
Yeah, he did. I mean, an appearance. That's like an Elon Musk appearance. He was on video call, and he was talking about how there's a 10% chance that AI might harm all of us. But, you know, for Elon, him visiting Saudi Arabia, especially in a time like this, it's so important because just recently Tesla opened their first headquarters in Saudi Arabia. And due to the tariff war that is ongoing between the U.S., between Donald Trump and China, between the U.S. and China, and between Trump and China, I believe, not even the U.S. against China, I think it's Trump against China, what we've seen has happened is that, you know, the Chinese are now going to diversify their products more, and they're going to obviously purchase more BYD than Tesla. And in fact, Tesla's second largest market in the world is China. And now with what Donald Trump has done, that has kind of threatened that relationship that Elon Musk has with China. So Saudi Arabia is his next big bet. And
But I think he will be happy what happened yesterday. So basically US and China, they've sat down finally and they've lowered the tariffs from the historic high of 145%, and China replicated it. So they've come down a little and they've negotiated it. They didn't give out a percentage, but they said we'll both reduce the tariffs. That is why the markets, European markets, our Gulf markets opened very high on today. So everyone is happy that at least US and China have sat down. And I think the most happy would be Elon Musk, that I can restart my second biggest market and won't have any problems. The main thing, whatever came out from the Trump tariffs was he wanted everyone on the table sitting and negotiating. And since China has now come to the table.
He gave them a reason
to. Yeah, and since China has come and they've had a successful negotiation, I think the world will be back on track. We've seen it in the stock market. We've seen it in every asset. We've seen it in crypto. Bitcoin is past the 100 mark. It's surviving there, staying there, stabilizing there. So I think whatever happened in the last 3, 4, 6 months, since 3 months or 4 months since Trump has come into power, everything is becoming a history. And if whatever we're seeing eventually happening, you can guess that the markets and everything will recover and they'll go towards a more greener side. So this trip also, as soon as the announcements come of the money that is being signed by Saudi for US and US for Saudi or whatever deals they make, be sure that the markets will go up. They will react very positively. So it's a very nice trip. We'll give you all the coverage. But talking a little more about Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia's MBC Group has reported a strong start to 2025 with first quarter net profits reaching Saudi Arabian riyals, 263.1 million. 263 Saudi riyals, basically. That's approximately $70 million, marking 117% year-on-year increase.
Now, compared to the previous quarter, profits rose more than 50%, signaling consistent financial momentum, and revenue surged to 2 billion riyal, up 65% from 1.23 billion riyal in the same period last year.
Earnings per share nearly doubled from Saudi riyal 0.33 to Saudi riyal 0.7. That's double, actually, good, reflecting strong shareholder returns. The boost was driven by high Ramadan viewership and strong advertising performance.
Now, the financial results come during a leadership transition. On May 1st, Michael Sneesby officially assumed the role of CEO following the resignation of Samuel Barnett, effective April 30.
Sneesby, a globally experienced media executive, has signaled his commitment to long-term sustainable growth through premium content investment and AI-driven operational efficiency.
Now, looking ahead, NBC aims to strengthen its leadership in the regional media sector by deepening audience engagement, scaling innovation, and maintaining transparent investor relations. Now, this is such a great achievement for Al Waleed Al Ibrahimi, the founder of NBC, for NBC itself. And I think in the market that we're living in right now, Majid, this is crazy.
Yeah.
A 50%
surge. The share prices
surge.
Are up nearly 5, 10% since yesterday, since the last 2, 3 days since the report came out. So they're doing good.
Are doing great. Yeah. And, you know, just on the subject of, you know, the NBC and other streaming platforms, you know, I came to this realization, Majid, that, you know how just very recently Warner Bros. Discovery purchased that 30% stake in OSN Plus, and that stake, they received it for more than $50 million. That's how much that stake was.
Yeah.
But if you actually think about it and you compare it to how much Starzplay was purchased for by ADQ and Ittisalat for more than $400 million, you have to sit there and ask yourself, you know, if OSN was sold, its stake was sold for so cheap, really, in comparison, then, you know, what does this hint at how its profit and revenue is really doing? I think that comparison for me there was definitely there. The NBC is definitely leading. And on the subject of Netflix and Disney right now, Netflix is leading, but Disney is rising really quickly. Like, Majid, I just researched this, and basically Netflix, their profit is $10.4 billion, over 49% year over year. And for Disney, that's $574 million. That's their streaming profit. But in revenue, this is where it gets really interesting. For Disney, it's $23 billion. And for Netflix, it's $33 billion. So look at how quickly they're catching up, and look at how quickly they're rising too. And, you know, just on the topic of Disney, I don't think any of us actually understood how great this was, Majid. Yeah. The fact that for all the Disneylands, by the way, yeah. Disney has ownership.
Yeah.
So I believe over Disney in Shanghai, they have some ownership of it. But it's the first time that they actually have a Disney,
yeah.
not just in the Middle East, not just in Balabi, not just in the UAE, where they don't have any ownership whatsoever. It's only royalties. It's actually the UAE that owns it completely. And I think for me, when I actually thought about it, maybe that's the reason why in the UAE we get such good products. It's because they're ran by homegrown UAE brands like Meral that because of the fact that they have sole ownership, they don't allow Western influence to step in.
Yeah.
I think for me that was like a, because I always ask myself, how come we get things like McDonald's but at better quality than other people?
They're owned by local people. They understand the culture. Even if you talk about McDonald's, they understand the taste. And if you talk about Disney, they understand what people will want there, what kind of rides they'll want, what kind of experience they will want. And Meral, again, they come from so much experience with SeaWorld, with all the attractions that they've built on Yas Island.
I feel like you've visited all of them, Majid.
Yeah. apart from Warner World? Brothers, because I don't like fast all these things. So I went to SeaWorld like three times now. And it's such a great place. So I've realized they create an experience. They just don't give you four rides here and five animals there. You walk in
five
and you...
Animals.
Yeah, you walk in... Just SeaWorld examples, very short, because in the center, they've created a whole ocean feel. So you go and stand there, you can hear water and you can see the videos of animals moving around. There's a video show every hour there. There's a whole globe in the center. And then you have five areas you can go into. And every area you walk into and you get the feel of it. So it's very nice that way that these people understand their own people and they build experiences according to their taste, be it food or be it any leisure place.
And soon we have a really special interview coming up, so stay tuned. Today, we're spotlighting one of the UAE's most dynamic fintech innovators, HubPay. Headquartered in the Emirates, HubPay is reshaping how businesses manage money across borders, offering everything from digital business accounts and global payroll solutions to the UAE's first fully regulated crypto payment gateway. Now, joining us is Kevin Kilty, the visionary CEO behind HubPay's rapid growth with a strong background in both finance and technology. Kevin's mission is clear: to build fast, secure, and compliant financial tools that empower SMEs and large enterprises alike to thrive in today's digital economy. Kevin, it's lovely to have you today. Thank you so much for coming in.
How's everything? How is the traffic? Let's start with the light
question. All good at this time of the day. That's good.
Yeah. So HubPay has been named one of the UAE's future 100 companies. What does that recognition mean to you, and how does it reflect your journey so far? So you can start with how HubPay works, what it is.
Sure.
And why, how somehow it became a future 100 company.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Great to be here with you both. The Future 100 recognition was great. It came quite quickly in the back of us winning Best FinTech for Businesses from the Arabia Inc. Awards. And I think it reflects, you know, where we are now to a degree, but far more about what the UAE is trying to build going forward, you know. And what the next 100 allows us to do is spend quite a bit of time with the Minister of the Economy and the other kind of leading kind of businesses to help kind of chart that journey. And be a part of this very dynamic ecosystem that is UAE businesses. Yeah. So answer your initial question, where, you know, what are we doing? We've been live now about 4.5 years. We're licensed and regulated by the Abu Dhabi Global Market. And our mission is to become the leading fintech platform for businesses in the UAE.
And, you know, for the second question, and, you know, this is completely historical, HubPay has just recently launched the UAE's first regulated crypto payment gateway. What I want to know is, you know, how significant is this for HubPay and for the broader business ecosystem?
Sure. So I think we've been working with, so we've done this in a partnership. No. So we're an EMI. We're a fintech that onboards businesses and provides them a range of solutions around payments. Think about a Monzo in the UK or an Alipay in China. And we've grown out that business well. On the crypto side, we're working with Aquanow, one of the leading global exchanges. They're licensed in a lot of countries. They're a great partner, and they're regulated by VARA in the UAE. Yeah. And so the demand we're seeing here right now is the opportunity and interest around crypto is there's an inflection point now where it's gone from being an asset like a Bitcoin, et cetera, to a medium of currency, especially on the stable coins. And so if you're going to do payments in the UAE, you need to have, for third parties, you're going to need to have a regulated EMI, and you're going to need a crypto payment. So the main use case we're solving initially was if you're an overseas investor, you could be from Indonesia, Nigeria, and you're looking to invest in property in the UAE, stablecoin is the fastest way to do so.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the property companies here, we've onboarded a good number. We're looking for a way to be able to accept in stablecoin like a USDT from Tether. And so we've built that solution with Aquanow, and we've launched it in market.
Nice. You talk about stable coins. Everyone, we have a 3 big company coalition. They're launching an AE coin. It's a FAB, Abu Dhabi Bank.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are, so I think eventually you guys will be able to somehow get them as clients as well. Yeah, it's going to be great if you can work with those people as well in terms of stablecoin. But I think you're mainly dealing with being a solution to doing the payment, right?
That's correct. Yeah, so in terms of the exact use case, it's as follows, right? Yeah. As now, we only went live with this a few weeks ago, but we've onboarded a huge number of companies already from fast Italian cars through to property companies. And so what we were really requested for was very simply, you're a property company in the UAE and you want to have an embedded payment link, much like you would with like a Checkout or a Stripe. And so for a user internationally, they can pay in a stablecoin, but the property company here receives in dirhams.
Nice.
So Aquanow will do the conversion of the cryptocurrency, and then we will do the third-party payment, but it's all done through our platform.
Nice.
And, you know, for the next question, you guys are obviously serving fintechs, I mean, SMEs with such large enterprises. What pain points exactly is HubPay actually solving for these SMEs?
Sure. Well, we started focusing on the FX point of view. So if you look at a lot of successful fintechs, again, let's use Europe as an example, the solution initially was cross-border payments. You want it cheaper, you want it faster, right? That's what we sold on the business side. That is now expanded into a full business account solution. So if you come over here and you just launched a business at DMCC, sometimes you can get a business set up really quickly. Free zones like DMCC, Sharjah, Rakes are rapid.
Yeah.
And they've got a huge range of different industries. What they're somewhat struggling with is then getting a bank account open as quickly as they got incorporated.
Mm.
And that's slowing down business a little bit in the UAE. And so coming back to your first question around the next, you know, the next 100, the future for the Ministry of Economy, that's the pain point we're trying to solve.
Mm.
So we're providing a solution where a business comes into the UAE, they can onboard in 24 hours on our platform. And then the idea is that we are a one-stop shop. Payments, international mass payments, crypto, payment links, et cetera, can all be done through HubPay.
Okay, nice. And global payroll and cross-border payments are two major pillars of HubPay, as I see. How are you making these processes faster, more secure, and more compliant? What's the technology that goes behind building such a nice startup, which is helping everyone nearly with payments?
I think the technology around these kind of industries has now existed for a while in certain areas. It's about putting it together in the most efficient way possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are building blocks that have been established.
Right.
I'd love to say we're reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
I think we've built a really solid platform. We've built a very efficient onboarding, which takes into factor all the different free zones you have here, which makes things a bit more complicated in the UAE. And so we can onboard businesses rapidly. I think we've built up a very strong global network, which was a little bit more challenging out of the UAE in the last few years. And so that's kind of addressed the kind of solution, just make it a lot easier for businesses to send cross-border payments.
Yeah, and, you know, I assume that, you know, trust in the fintech world, it's really important. You know, what regulations or, you know, how does regulation work in building that trust with users, especially with the crypto offerings that you guys have?
So regulation is critical in finance.
Yeah.
We've seen, I think, in existing fiat fintech, the regulatory frameworks, kind of the EMI framework's been around for a while. They're difficult to get as licenses, but they provide that kind of trust for customers that you're not going to lose the money or you're not going to collapse overnight. Money's held in client money accounts. The companies are rigorously tested for everything from cybersecurity through to what payment partners they're using. On the crypto side, there has been, because it's grown so rapidly, regulations caught up. Now, the UAE has done a pretty impressive job at building a very robust framework through VARA. Other countries and regions haven't been as quick, and they have lost out.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no doubt, we just had the end of kind of token 2449 last week. Everybody was here.
Yeah,
it was crazy. So crowded.
You would not have had that. If that was, let's say, fintech, you wouldn't have literally had every single person from Stripe to Alipay being in the country. But in crypto, you do. And that's shown the speed where UAE's been able to capitalize on that opportunity. And so I think in the UAE, they've created a very robust but also a progressive framework. And that's allowed us to work with businesses like Aqua now.
And it's very deeply embedded, HubPay, in high-value sectors like real estate. You just talked about it. What do you think, how does HubPay help them? You said real estate. Just to give you an example, DLD is going towards tokenization of real estate as well. So it's, everything is being somehow put into the blockchain circle and cryptos. So how do you guys come in, and what's the larger trend? Is real estate more going towards crypto payments? You as a business owner who works with companies, which industry is mostly handling crypto payments?
Yeah, so I think to break those kind of questions up, the kind of first point is we are a fintech for businesses.
Yeah.
We're looking to be a one-stop shop.
Mm.
A few years ago, crypto was not a major part of that for businesses. It is now becoming so. Also, where we are right now, one of the things UAE has built as a country is an incredible gateway to emerging markets, right? You know, the old phrase, all roads used to lead to Rome. Well, now all roads really are leading through the UAE, right? And it isn't just because you've got the largest airport in the world or the ninth largest seaport, I think, globally, and certainly in the region. There is a fintech, and there is a payments, and there is a corporate kind of road through here through a lot of companies setting up their headquarters in this region. And so if I'm in Western Europe, cryptocurrency is less valuable for business for payments because the existing financial architecture is highly established and a lot of currencies are stable. If I am a large international company with a regional HQ in the UAE and I'm trading, collecting payments from Nigeria or Ghana or doing cross-border Africa trade or then going out to South Asia, well, what currencies am I using, right? To go from Nigerian Naira into dollar is going to have volatility risks. Yeah. Mm. It's going to have liquidity risks. Where if I, let's say, look at a stable coin, USDT, yeah, I've removed the volatility because it's effectively pegged to the dollar, but USDT will settle in under 15 minutes, yeah, right? So that is now showing its great application. That was not the case even as recent as 2-3 years ago in crypto. Yeah. Mm. And that's what has been talked about. So I think to your point, that is now the shift we're now seeing. Mm. If you are in Indonesia and you want to go and buy a 10 million dirham property in the UAE, USDT is a great a payment solution for that. And so we need to enable that as part of multiple solutions across the kind of sector. Your second question in terms of where do you see it going longer term, I think tokenization is a separate argument, but when it is linked in terms of the kind of blockchain, does it make sense to put all the property transactions of, let's say, someone like Dubai Holdings onto and tokenize that and use that as a way to sell it rather than, let's say, individual shares or individual units? Yeah, possibly. Yeah. And you have seen that through other kind of companies, other tech companies in the UAE already. Yeah.
They're selling a part of the property. You don't buy the full flat. 100 people are the owners of one flat in different sections. So it's a very nice way of doing it. But the main idea, I think, what I've understood from Happy and from the viewer's perspective, whenever you have a small company or a big company, you want payment solution, you want to pay your employees on time, you can use your gateway. And if you want to even make them payments in crypto, you can use that, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Nice. What we want to be is every business coming in is the UAE. Mm. It makes most sense to go get an account with HubPay.
And you just said something really interesting, Kevin, about how, you know, the UAE has become the place where, if you look, everyone is going. So it's definitely become a global fintech hub. Where does HubPay fit into that? And how is it going to take advantage of that?
Well, I think within the UAE, even though the country is relatively small in terms of population and kind of landmass, the depth of the market and the growth of the market is significant. Yeah. And going back to my original point in terms of being a gateway or a route to the rest of the world, I think what we're looking to do is build a significant position in the UAE. We've got a long way to go. There's a very deep market to grow out to, both in the number of companies and also the number of products we're launching. Mm. And then, on a wider sense, then going internationally, but then staying UAE as a headquarters. So even if we were to pick up, let's say, the license in Europe or the UK and galvanize those kind of links and those solutions for the businesses that are cross-border and there's huge amounts of trade between Europe and the UAE, it would still be kind of UAE as that kind of hub.
Mm. So you've just been regulated. That's a very good sign. Any future plans in terms of what services you provide that you think maybe the market is mature enough to incorporate something new? Are you planning something innovation-wise, technology-wise?
Well, I mean, and the next one for us, the kind of low-hanging fruit is once we went live with business accounts here, we generally listen to what our customers want. And so when we went live with business accounts, we were speaking to some of the free zones here, and they said, well, you're solving a huge issue for us. Yeah. We've got a lot of companies coming in. They need accounts tomorrow. Yeah. They want to start trading tomorrow. You look at other fintechs like Gidea, who put out the POS machines, they can get POS in 24 hours. Well, HubPay can do an account in 24 hours. And so the next question we asked for is, well, can you guys launch out cards, which is entirely logical. Yeah. So the next couple of months, business cards goes live. And then really, you are the full fintech solution for a business. Yeah. I think the question down the line is, would you partner with other institutions, potentially around other financial products? Yeah. That might be in the lending sphere. We shall see how that goes. I think with our existing product stack, there's a long way to go within the UAE. Mm. And I think possibly linking that up with other kind of countries, because we're also regulated in Pakistan, nice, would be particularly powerful.
And I think this is something that we're all curious about. As the CEO and founder of HubPay, you know, what are, you know, setbacks that you faced, and what have been some of your most rewarding moments?
Well, I think the setbacks that all our startups have is, startup CEOs have, is the fundraising is very challenging. Yeah. That market shifted massively in 22 when the inflation spiked and there was a big correction with interest rates. And so fundraising is always a significant challenge, and try and get that escape velocity out. But the most rewarding stuff is just building something from the ground up with a dynamic team. We've got 60 employees. Most of them are here in the UAE. They come from all corners of the world, from all different backgrounds. And every day you're in the office with them, you know, working with customers and building solutions is a great opportunity.
So Word will ask you about the message for business owners. But my question, last question, would be anyone trying to build a new startup, they see some potential in some market, they see a window or door. What's the best three lessons you've learned through your journey? Like, what's the three things that you'll say that do this?
I'd say the top three would be, number one, go through an accelerator program.
Oh, yeah.
We were lucky to go through Startup Bootcamp, which was initially at DIFC, and they were really good. But there's a lot of programs now, some of them sponsored by the UAE government, which just brings other kind of startups together and helps you kind of refine the idea. The second piece is really focusing on network in terms of your ability to get fundraising. It's going to be through who you know, who you went to university with, who you're going to recruit, etc. And the third thing is always conserve your cash, because it's always going to take way longer than you think it's going to take.
Yeah.
And finally, for the last question today, you know, what's your message to UAE business owners and to those who are still relying on traditional financial systems?
There's a lot of very good traditional financial systems and institutions out there, and they're very effective. But what I would say, if you are a business in the UAE, right now, we don't charge anything to open an account. And for the next 90 days, we're running no monthly subscription fees. So if you onboard us now, it's free.
Nice.
And I reckon you're going to find we've got a better payment solution and product stack than anybody else out here. Hubbase is going to become the leading fintech for businesses in the UAE. And so we'd love to get as many on board as from now as possible.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much for being here today, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you
and
very much,
that is Kevin Kilty for you, the CEO of the most leading fintech business in the UAE. And that's a wrap for today. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production under the Augustus Media Podcast Network. See you guys tomorrow.